We come to Bitcoin very much like our long-term perspective is it's a weird economy, right? It's global, it's decentralized, it's outside the control of any government, but like it sort of overlays maybe in other economies. But we believe that like Bitcoin's money, much like the actual white paper says, and thus there'll be capital markets and there'll be debt capital markets and there'll be payment systems and there'll be like real functioning economic activity. And 3% of global GDP is life insurance premiums. So 3% of that economy's GDP should be life insurance premiums.
How do you plan for life insurance in a weak or devaluing currency? Well, the answer is you really can't. A problem that even some developed nations are starting to struggle with. How does Bitcoin flip this completely on its head? We speak today with Zach Townsend, co-founder and CEO of Meanwhile, the first fully Bitcoin-denominated insurance company. We go through Zach's journey and how his previous entrepreneurship experiences got him to building Meanwhile. We speak through a variety of topics, including how he set up a regulated entity, how the products work, his vision for the company, fundraising learnings, as well as much more valuable advice. We hope you enjoy. And as a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. If you enjoy the content, please remember to subscribe or share, as this all helps us grow organically. Lynn and Israel are partners at Baselayer Advisors, where they employ their strong network of venture capital partners and startups to connect investors with unique opportunities within the Bitcoin innovation space. Alongside this, they support founders with their strategic growth and fundraising goals. Visit our website's advisory section to learn more. Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel Munoz, joined with co-host Lynn Berstow. Today, we welcome Zach Townsend from Meanwhile, CEO and co-founder of the first, to our knowledge, Bitcoin-based insurance company, specifically Life. So we'll get into all of that. But first of all, welcome, Zach. We're excited to have you on.
Yeah, thanks so much. Very happy to be here. First and still only is my understanding. So.
Yeah, so we have quite a bit to get through. Very interesting business that you're building. And before we get into the business side of things, Zach, it'd be great to start with a little on your background. As I understand, both you and your co-founder, Max, come from Silicon Valley tech. We'd love to hear a little bit both on your prior businesses, your background before, Meanwhile, but also what particularly about Bitcoin caught your attention? Was it the hard money aspect? Was it the technology side? If you could share what brought you to Meanwhile.
As you say, both my co-founder and I are like fintech entrepreneurs or fintech, Silicon Valley folks by background. So I actually started in public service. I was the sort of head of innovation in the city of Newark, New Jersey, when Cory Booker was mayor. And I got really interested in financial inclusion and financial empowerment, sort of asking questions like, why do people in West Newark not have bank accounts? And why do they do check cashing? And somewhat naively, actually, I thought the marginal cost of database entries is free. So like the marginal cost of checking accounts should be free. I think I didn't understand a lot about fraud and compliance costs at the time, but that was sort of my mental model. So when Cory decided to run for Senate in like 2013, early 2013, I decided I wanted to go like work on building financial infrastructure. And I just applied out of the blue to what seemed to be the coolest financial infrastructure company I could find. And I got hired as employee, I think 35 or 36 at Stripe. And then in what is the like best life decision, but worst financial decision of my life, I left pretty quickly. And an old buddy and I got into Y Combinator, and we built a sort of like bank account as a service company. We sort of invented that category. And went through YC, we were backed by Andreessen Horowitz and Mix Ventures and Data Collective and a bunch of great angels, and built that company for 3 years, did a lot of crazy stuff, but like fundamentally we were like too early to that market. Now there are like 10 people in that market. We sort of created the market, but like 3 years before it made any sense. So we sort of fell up into an acquisition by Silicon Valley Bank. But to answer your question, we had offers from a bunch of companies, and one of those companies was Coinbase. Another opportunity I had to potentially have made a ton of money and, passed me by. But Coinbase at the time was like 40 people, and they were really struggling with like basic financial infrastructure and KYC and compliance and the stuff. So they wanted to like absorb our company, so we could work on that stuff. So I actually received my first Bitcoin from Brian showing me how Coinbase worked, like in a meeting where he was trying to convince me to come work at Coinbase.
Interesting.
So I wasn't, I think in that moment, like wowed, but I think I was interested in the technology and interested in Bitcoin as a store of value. And I actually go off and do other things. Like I led a chunk of products and another fintech unicorn. I worked at McKinsey as a leader in the fintech practice. And I did another stint in public service as the first chief data officer in California. But along that entire way, I was like buying Bitcoin every week on Coinbase. But I sort of, I think like a lot of people, I got a little turned off by like the ICO boom. I don't know, like 2015 to 2021 was like a sort of weird time in Bitcoin and crypto, or that was sort of my impression. So it remains sort of like an avocation for me. And then the way we founded the company, which I think is just, it's a mental model that I think more people should have, which is we sat down, my co-founder Max and I, and we knew we wanted to start something. We were both ready to leave the things we were doing. And we said to ourselves, like, okay, this is a new economy. It's not just an asset or, even in piece of technology, like we have the mental model of like it's an emerging economy. And we felt that we were really good at like financial stuff and regulatory bullshit. And we were like, okay, we think that the companies that are going to accrue a lot of value are the ones that can like build regulated finance, or a way to accrue value in this economy is to build regulated financial institutions. So we sat down and we wrote a list and we're like, okay, what are the regulated financial institutions that exist in every economy in the world? And we're like, well, every economy has a bank and every economy has a payment system and every economy has exchanges and every economy, oh, as asset managers. And we actually didn't have insurance on the list. We were sort of separately thinking about insurance stuff, just a long running interest of ours and mine. And then like 2 weeks late, and we were like, yeah, people are sort of doing all these. Like we weren't really sure what we were going to do. And then like 2 weeks later, I woke up in the middle of the night, like 3 a.m. I was like, there should be a Bitcoin life insurance company. And I like went to my office and I wrote the memo that we basically have executed, shockingly. But more, more importantly at the time, it was the memo like we successfully raised a seed round on. So anyway, we come to Bitcoin very much like our long-term perspective is that it's a weird economy, right? It's global, it's decentralized, it's outside the control of any government, but like it sort of overlays maybe in other economies, but we believe that like Bitcoin's money, much like the actual white paper says, and thus there'll be capital markets and there'll be debt capital markets and there'll be payment systems and there'll be like real functioning economic activity. And 3% of global GDP is life insurance premiums. So 3% of that economy's GDP should be life insurance premiums.
That's fascinating, Zach. And I want to drill down on a couple of different things. I mean, a lot of the founders that Israel and I talk to are hardcore Bitcoiners that end up solving problems that they run into themselves. And I love the fact, I mean, Israel and I both have come out of the traditional early stage tech world. And we don't see enough founders like yourself who are successful entrepreneurs. And the entrepreneurial mindset really takes a look at, what problems need to be solved and how can I create a business around it. And so love that you took that approach and saw that opportunity. And but I want to ask you, you mentioned that 2015 to 21 was kind of a complicated time. I mean, we had the ICO craze. You got into Bitcoin, I'm assuming, when Coinbase was pretty much Bitcoin only, and Bitcoin, yes, there wasn't as much noise. And similar to me, and I know also that time, unless you were spending full time on it, it felt like a lot of noise. I mean, there were a lot of great opportunities and there were a lot of great ideas and and the tokenization and the different business models, but it was also quite confusing too. How did you end up, you and Max, distilling down in a pretty early point? I think it's more advanced now, but why all of the rest was noise and Bitcoin was a signal that you needed to focus on as the kind of the foundational financial system? Yeah. I mean, how did you two come to that conclusion?
Yeah. Let me just actually respond to something you said at the beginning, which is I was the first user of the policy product, and we can talk about what the product is. But I think it did end up solving a problem I have. Before that we were taping, we were talking about, like, I have two kids. And it did resonate with us right from the beginning that, like, this is a core, like, financial product, and it's a core financial product for others, but it is, like, also for us. And, like, why hasn't someone thought of it? And I think we're fortunate that a lot of our policyholders end up having that response too, like, oh, this is obvious, like, once you've thought of it. To your question about Bitcoin, I think there is a real natural synergy between, like, hodling and life insurance. Like, life insurance, I don't know, is like the original HODL, right? It's like saving for intergenerational wealth transfer or like retiring your bloodline or whatever. So there was that, like, cultural alignment. I think it ended up being a little practical in the beginning, which is, like, life insurance is about, from the perspective of the insurer, is about making really long-term promises. And really long-term promises in the context of what's supposed to be, like, storing value for your users. And I'm not one of these Bitcoiners who, I guess, is like all other, you know, ETHs, a shitcoin, or, like, I mean, that's fine if you believe that. I think that those, it's actually maybe more epistemological, and that I'm like, wow, I think that's really interesting, this idea of a global computation platform. But I'll have, like, absolutely zero opinion on the noise of, like, whether that's going to be ETH or Solana or Avalanche or 10 things that haven't been created yet. So it's not that I don't see any utility in those things. It's that, to me, like, Bitcoin is a store of value. And I don't necessarily understand why Solana the store of value. It may actually have utility, which I think where I'm different from some Bitcoiners. I don't know, actually. I've sort of, like, tuned it out. But I think that if I had to ask myself the question of all the tokens or whatever in the world, which one am I comfortable making a promise, a 50-year promise in? Bitcoin's the only answer to that question.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me, I'm not sure if you ever read a paper by John Pfeffer a few years back. It called The Investment Case for Bitcoin, and he touches precisely on the points you're alluding to, Zach, that, you know, maybe some of these other tokens, they'll perhaps have some utility, but from the investment lens, from the long-term actual preservation of capital, there's just no, you know, there's no close comparison to Bitcoin. Well, but, you know, maybe we can transition to the product itself, Zach. So life insurance, I mean, of the banking and insurance world, is, to your point, probably the most long-term thinking of the group, just by nature of the industry and the product. So what is Meanwhile's offering? I mean, we alluded to it earlier that it's Bitcoin-denominated, fully Bitcoin-based insurance, which makes it unique in several ways, and we can get into some of those points. But let's start with what the product offering actually is.
Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a Bitcoin-only financial services company that I've personally been using for years. I really enjoy the strong focus they have on security and reliability, which ultimately leads to peace of mind. I know you're a big fan as well.
And I am. I feel so confident referring people to River, in addition to what you mentioned. Also, they've got US-based phone support, which I think for somebody who's less familiar with the space or used to personal service is really helpful. In addition, they have a private client services division. So if you're looking to invest $100,000 or more, they have a special suite of services designed for you, whether you're a high net worth individual, a family office, or a trust. I also really appreciate the continued improvements they make in the back end so that reliability and security continues to be really apparent.
They additionally also have US dollar cash deposits paid out in Bitcoin. They have a yield product for that, which is an interesting alternative way of accumulating Bitcoin. Overall, fantastic suite of services. If you're interested in onboarding or opening up an account at River, use partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin for personalized onboarding.
Yeah, our core product offering, it may be useful to take a step back and sort of say, what are we? And what we are is we're a life insurance company, but we are entirely denominated in Bitcoin. So we're not a dollar company backed with Bitcoin. We are regulated and licensed in Bermuda. Bermuda is like a legit place to have an insurance company. It's like the insurance capital of the world. Like every insurance company you've ever heard of has an affiliate or reinsurer there. And what we do is we accept all premiums in Bitcoin and we pay all claims in Bitcoin. And then we do everything in between. All the like insurance mumbo jumbo and operations entirely in Bitcoin. So we like do the actuarial math in Bitcoin. We do our reserving in Bitcoin. We do our audited financials in Bitcoin. Like, so it's like we're running a life insurance company in euro or yen or dollars or Swiss francs or whatever. But it's Bitcoin is the currency. And you might have questions on that. But then to answer your question, our ultimate aspiration is that we're going to sell every insurance product that you could sort of imagine you might have ever heard of, like a deferred annuity or company owned life insurance or whatever in Bitcoin. Now what our first product is for individuals that may be, they may have a trust or whatever, but like fundamentally it's like for an individual. It's called Whole Life because it lasts your whole life. And our policyholders will eventually die. It is much more of like an investment. There is protection if you get hit by a bus, but also like you're going to die eventually. So your beneficiaries, your kids, your husband, your wife, your nieces and nephews, they will eventually get a payout. So there's that like guaranteed aspect of you're sort of like saving for your loved ones. So the core idea is something like you pay us, I'm just going to pick round numbers. These might be small to some people, big to others. Like you pay us one Bitcoin a year for 10 years. So it's a 10 pay. And then we promise you some amount when you die, like 14 or 16 or 30. It sort of depends on your age and your mortality. Lynn will be happy to know that you get a higher payout if you're a woman because you're expected to live longer. And then what you get from that is mostly true across all countries, but I'm going to sort of describe it what's like true, usually true. But, if you are a taxpayer in Mexico or a taxpayer somewhere else, it may be different. But what you sort of get from the policy is one, you get protection, as I mentioned, right? So like whenever you die, you get that 15 and like maybe you die soon, even though you're not supposed to. That would be terrible for all of us. We don't want you to die, but then you'd get the 15 Bitcoin I mentioned. The second is we're turning 10 into 15 and we can sort of talk about how we do that. But even if you were doing what we're doing, in most jurisdictions, you would pay interest income every year. And that doesn't happen. So we get further than you would on your own because it's compounding like in this tax-free structure. The third thing is, again, in most places, you can borrow value back out of the policy tax-free. So that's like really amazing in Bitcoin because I think many of us expect that Bitcoin will be worth more in the future than it is now. And even for you as an individual while you're alive, so if Bitcoin becomes like worth $1 million a coin, you can borrow one of those Bitcoin back out, but you don't owe any like intermediate capital gains tax on it. So it's a way to sort of like get liquidity from your Bitcoin without, incurring capital gains tax. And then the last thing is, it's passed on. It's like passed on to your loved ones. That's both a tax thing, and then it's like income tax free passed on to your loved ones. But also, we have some users, who are just like, there's some real horror stories about people dying and their loved ones can't get their Bitcoin. We're under a legal obligation to make sure that, your beneficiaries get the Bitcoin. Okay. So that like basic legacy management.
Okay. Maybe it's helpful to just go through a concrete example just to make sure we kind of land this. So using just kind of rounded hypothetical numbers, this policy is for, so I'm conscious of the fact that I'm going to die just like we all are. And I want.
Yeah, I have to talk to people all day, every day about them dying.
So so this is for, of course, the long-term thinker, this whole, generational wealth. Of course, most people like the thought of leaving something behind for their loved ones. So I want to take out a life insurance policy. And of course, I understand Bitcoin is, in my view, the best money that we'll have decades from
Correct.
Now, right? Okay. So that's kind of the starting point. And then you mentioned some of the mechanics, which I just want to kind of go through to make sure the listeners understand what you just mentioned. So let's use the 10 Bitcoin policy as an example. So I'd be paying my premiums for the next 10 years, one Bitcoin each year. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct. And the 10 equal payments, whatever you...
One. Okay. So one even Bitcoin for the next 10 years.
Yeah. Or yeah. So anywhere between... We do policies right now anywhere between a tenth of a Bitcoin a year for 10 years. So adds up to one, or our maximum is maybe like 30 Bitcoin. So like 3 Bitcoin a year for 10 years.
Okay. So, so we have a 10-year window basically with even payouts. So let's use the 10 Bitcoin.
Pay-ins.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. As the example. Okay. So then I'm contributing one Bitcoin for the next 10 years. And you, again, an example, because I know this takes into account various actuarial tables and life expectancy, et cetera. But let's just say in this hypothetical case, I'm have an expected payout of 15. So basically I'm contributing one Bitcoin a year for the next 10 years. And when I die, my beneficiaries will receive 15 Bitcoin. And you mentioned this borrowing component, Zach, which,
Israel, can I just want to jump in and ask one question. If we believe that Bitcoin is going to increase in value, could we front load it? Could we pay? Could we elect to pay all 10 Bitcoin early on? Or
yeah, so
how does that work?
Let me answer that in two different ways. One is we usually do a 10 pay because in a lot of countries there are like rules about how much you can front load. So we are complying with these rules to make sure you get the tax benefits. So it sort of, without getting into the weeds, like depends on where you're like a tax resident and stuff about like whether you should have do a single pay or a 10 pay. Having said that, we allow people the option of prepayment, which is like you can pay us and it sort of sits in an account and then we like pay our own premiums over time. And interestingly, a bunch of people like to do that. Also like the biggest policyholders tend to like to do that. I think mostly for like logistical reasons. They're just like, I never want to think about this again. Like, here's 30 Bitcoin. one thing I will say is whether you pay us up front or you pay over 10 years, we really don't recommend that people like are short Bitcoin. That is like, we don't think you should buy a policy bigger than the amount of Bitcoin you have. We actually have some people who have done that. They're like, oh, I'm going to use this as a forcing mechanism, the dollar cost average into Bitcoin. Not my recommendation. Anyway, if that answers your question, Lynn.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, Israel. Go ahead with the lending questions.
No, yeah, thanks for clarifying that. And then the borrowing component that you mentioned, how does that work, Zach? How much can I borrow? Yeah.
Again, it sort of depends on your age. There's this, like, you almost think that inside the account, there's like a savings account. And when you buy the policy, or we make the offer for you to buy the policy, there's actually just a giant table, and you can see like every year how much you can borrow out of the policy. But it starts low and it gets higher. It's like amortizing over time how much you can borrow. And the way you should think about the borrow is, as I said, it's tax-free, and we don't really expect you to pay it back. We expect you to eventually die. And then we net the loan out of the payout that was supposed to go to your kids, right? So let's say you put this 10 in. It's now year 15 or 20. You borrow one Bitcoin out. You live another 30 years. You know, maybe that one, we're charging you interest. Maybe that one turns into 1.5 or something. And then instead of your kids getting 15, they get 13 and a half, right? What's nice about it is if you do need liquidity from your Bitcoin, this is tax-free. But unlike other like dollar-based loans, there's no margin calling, there's no margining, there's no like chance of getting blown out. It just like it's a policy loan. It's just like thing.
It's netted out of the final payout to the beneficiaries. Correct. Yeah. If it's not paid.
But look, we do have some, we have some crazy policyholders who are like, I'm going to like redeem when it's high, and I'm going to pay back when it's low, and like I can do all these crazy mechanics. And we're like, the real intention here is like, you want to buy a house, and 15 years in, you borrow a Bitcoin out, and then like, it's a long term loan.
But I love this because it's really operating on a Bitcoin standard. So the problem with loans comes into play when the dollar price of Bitcoin fluctuates and goes down in value, and then you get margin called. But in the case of meanwhile, you're borrowing a percentage of your Bitcoin assets that are in there. So the dollar price doesn't matter nearly as much.
It doesn't matter.
I'm borrowing a quarter of a Bitcoin to do this thing that I want to do, and I can pay it back. But from your accounting standpoint, which I love, I'd love to even dive deeper into that. It's just that everything that you're doing is priced in Bitcoin. I love that.
Yeah, for us, I like to say that, to my knowledge, we're one of the few companies for whom one Bitcoin truly is one Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, it's great to see Zach, and I think as more companies take the path that you've chosen, we'll of course soon enough normalize it, and then people will think about it down the line a little more in simple terms, just like I can, run a business in the U.S. based on U.S. dollars, or in Switzerland based on francs. Well, I can run a business out of anywhere based on Bitcoin, right? That's kind of how I look at it. But I mean, to that point, Lynn, of the accounting side, I agree. Let's get into that aspect a little more, because it is so interesting. And, once you conceptually understand that it's just another form of money, another currency, let's say, to do the accounting books by, okay, maybe you as a founder, a company, like you're there, you get it, and you want to execute on that strategy. But and the reality is that many regulators, accountants, jurisdictions are still not too comfortable with that. So I'd love to hear also a little bit of your story with the Bermudan authority. The regulators, how did you get them to be comfortable with this?
Yeah,
it's a great question. I mean, I think we were really fortunate, right? So the BMA is like a globally, the Bermuda Monetary Authority, sorry, they're the regulator in Bermuda. The BMA is like a globally recognized regulator of insurance companies, and is doing more and more life insurance. And the islands are such an interesting place that it's not like a tourist destination. It's like 40,000 Bermudians and then like 40,000 actuaries, lawyers, and accountants. So it's not a big party scene, but if insurance is your jam, it's like really amazing. So they are, you know, have all this equivalency with the EU and with the US regulatory regimes that are state by state. And, you know, but they try to do innovative things. And then they've also tried to become a hub on the Bitcoin and crypto side. So like Coinbase's offshore operations are in Bermuda, Circle's offshore operations are in Bermuda, Block's offshore operations are in Bermuda. So they were, before we even got there, trying to think about like, how do we merge this expertise we've developed in digital assets and this expertise we have in insurance? And so they were starting to like, they like had put out a, you know, a guidance paper. And I think they were surprised at what we wanted to do, which is to entirely be in Bitcoin. What they were expecting is for people to like use Bitcoin as capital and then like go write normal dollar business. And we're like, no, 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 that's going to be really risky. Actually, like we want to do everything in Bitcoin. And they were open to that, like right from the beginning. And it made a ton of sense to them. Because in some ways, like insurance is the business of like ratios. Like I, like, you know, we pay you, you pay us 10 and we pay you 15. There's like, there's a lot of math, and those ratios, as Israel said, they can be in euros or yen or Swiss francs, or, you know, they could be in Bitcoin. Right. And then there's just tons and tons of mechanical issues, right? Like, when you're doing the balance sheet of an insurance company, a lot of what you're doing is taking the present value of future assets and liabilities. What is the natural discount rate in Bitcoin? Well, yeah, nobody like doesn't. Yeah. So we had to write, you know, like a 50 page memo. We like, we're like, okay, here's like four different theories. You can like use options pricing. You can use this, you can use that. You know, like, so we had to do all the things of an insurance company. And those things are very normal, but then they were just like, we're the first ever to do them. And then I'll give an example on our Actually Financial. Like, you're right. On some level, they're super simple. Like, there is just a B in the corner instead of a dollar sign. Now, we actually state all our financials down to the Satoshi because we want to like sort of just be like, we know where every single Satoshi is. There's a lot of decimal points, but fundamentally, it looks like the balance sheet and the income statement of any other life insurer. But sort of to your point, like we have an audit opinion from an external auditor. And the audit opinion is like, these are the financial statements are good in the sense that they are following all the regulatory rules. They are statutory. There's like statutorily correct. Like we've, you know, checked all the stuff, right? So like stamp of approval. But then because it's not GAAP, because GAAP doesn't contemplate being stated in Bitcoin or IFRS, which is the like outside the US accounting standard, then there's a qualification in the state, in the audit. So it's like the statements are perfect as statutory financials, but you know, we have to note that they're not GAAP compliant. So they're just like, even that, like it, yeah. And the last thing I'll say, just because on the external auditor, is it took us less time. I think the BMA, the Bermuda Monetary Authority, was on board. It took us actually longer to get service providers. Like we had to get, we have to have an outside actuary. You have to have an external auditor. Like those people, that it was in some ways tougher for them. Because you have to think, we were doing this like basically FTX blew up and then we were trying to operationalize our business.
But I guess, I, you know, and then I can see the way you compare it, like if you're writing a policy and doing the business in Swiss francs, it's like no one would think another thing about it. So by replacing Bitcoin as the model, as the standard for everything, it made the mental exercise easier than doing the conversion back and forth between dollars and Bitcoin. So
it's so funny actually to talk to actuaries about it, because at first they think we're crazy. And then we explain how we're doing it and they're like, oh, I mean, like if you were to do it, like that's the way you would do it. And yeah, this was just sort of intuitive for us because we I don't know, Max and I, like, right from the beginning, we were like, well, if it's in Bitcoin, like, then the entity doesn't care about the price of Bitcoin.
All right.
Like, we've been running this company and the price of Bitcoin was like 30, then it was 15, then it was 70, then it was 30, then it was 105. So, like, but you should think that our financial statements stated every quarter are just like growing over time because they're in Bitcoin.
Just touch on or clarify. So your policies are available globally. Are there any, and just how, I mean, just drilling down a little bit more on regulatory, not being as familiar with what the global regulatory environment is for insurance, but how did you, I mean, I don't know if Bermuda is so set up that they have like all the country's representatives are based there.
So no, no. So I guess what I'll say is, okay, well, there's two questions there. One is, who are our policyholders right now? Our policyholders right now are people in the U.S. We've just started to accept people from Canada and the UK. This is not there are regulatory challenges that I'll about explain, but this is primarily like we have to be able to do KYC, I know your customer, any money laundering, and we have to be able to underwrite you. So our like rollout to accepting people from other countries is like on us building operations, which is like something we're going to do with our Series A money. The way we work in general is like offshore life insurance is a thing. I'm not inventing that space. And we operate on like a reverse solicitation basis. So we do not run ads in the United States, whether it's word of mouth, whether anyone's hearing about us because someone writes about us or hearing about us because you're listening to this podcast. Like we are fortunate that, thousands of people have come to our website and expressed an interest in buying the policy. And that is a sort of common way to be an offshore life insurer. I think one thing that is really important just in general is our current product is designed for a sophisticated high net worth individual. Like, even if you're someone who's buying the smallest policy, which is one Bitcoin, like that's $100,000 right now. Like that's a pretty big commitment. And so I like to say, like, we are not in the business of convincing people to want to hold Bitcoin. We are in the business of convincing people who have already decided to be in the Bitcoin economy or to own Bitcoin or participate in Bitcoin to, you know, have a way to save intergenerationally. And I think that also, even like more importantly than the like all the care we put in to make sure we're not advertising to people inappropriately, is we're also just like not trying to convince Granny to buy a life insurance product that she doesn't understand. And I think generally, if you do your best to do right by your customers and follow the letter of the law, like, you know, no one gets all that upset.
This brings to mind something I'd love to kind of pick your brain at, Zach. And I'm sure it's part of the thought process and, you know, kind of vision you have for the company. But so life insurance, let's just take life insurance as a product globally. It has very different penetration rates around the world, depending on, you know, if you're in a developing country or underdeveloped country, you know, maybe cultural aspects of, you know, savings culture, et cetera. There's many factors. But when you were thinking about a life insurance company based on a global model, or sorry, on a global money, are you thinking that life insurance penetration will likely increase a lot because of the Bitcoin standard? I mean, suddenly people in other countries, let's say countries in weaker currencies, historically, when you have such a volatile or, you know, weak currency, it's just harder to think about life insurance, right? Because that currency is not too reliable. So now in this Bitcoin world, it gives people, you know, an amazing savings tool. It gives people a way to think long term.
Is that the part of the thought process and vision for the company that you'll be that you'll will actually see a lot more life insurance, I guess, you know, let's say market share just around the world because it's in BTC? Does that make sense?
Yes, in fact, this is the core vision of the company and why I wake up every day working on it. I mean, as nice as it is to help people with 1,000 Bitcoin, like you know, a tax and estate plan. The ultimate vision for the company is exactly what you're saying, right? If you live in Argentina, you do not buy life insurance because you are going to live longer than the Argentinian peso. So it just doesn't make any sense. So we look around the world and we actually say the world is underinsured. If you live in Argentina or Turkey or Cambodia or India or Nigeria, you don't buy life insurance. And like our ultimate vision is to systematically move from what are like pretty big policies right now, like in time to smaller policies. Now, it's also the case, right, that everyone, I think, or lots of people in the world right now have concerns about inflation risk and currency risk and political risk and jurisdictional risk. And like if I bought $1 million in life insurance coverage for myself in 2018 when my son was born, I've seen the purchasing power of that policy go down 20-30% from inflation, right? So whereas if I bought, we didn't exist in 2018, but if I had bought a 10 Bitcoin policy, I obviously would be, you know, or whatever was $1 million in coverage. I mean, it would be so much, right? So I think that dynamic is exactly right. This is global. It is decentralized. It is outside the control of any government. And that is going to be attractive, I think, to tons of people, both who live in countries where that sort of externalized stability has never existed, but also in countries where, you know, I think people legitimate concerns about the stability of their currency.
And also, I think the lending part of it is really interesting because where they're in Israel, and I've talked about it, and we've talked to a number of the new lending products that are out there. But this being you're borrowing percentages of Bitcoin versus dollar values of Bitcoin. So, and on a tax deferred basis. And do you, are there interest charges along the way, or does the whole interest accrue to the policy and it's deducted from the net death benefit? Or how does that work? Because I think it's just a great way of pulling out.
Interest is accrued along the way. Basically, you should think of the fundamental. We're very transparent about this. I think most insurance companies are. The business we're in is that 10 to 15 in your policy, there's an implicit guarantee there of a rate of return. And that can basically be like to simplify a complex set of math because there's a probability distribution of when you're going to die and you're taking the present value of that. And all. Like basically, it's like we're guaranteeing you 2% returns. And then what we do as a business is we get 3% returns. And we can come back to how we do that. But that's basically what we do is we guarantee you 2% returns in this like tax advantage vehicle. And then like we go get 3% returns. So we make that like 1% spread. So how does the loan work? What we do at the loan is you borrow out a Bitcoin. We just charge you 3%. So the policy is still accumulating in value, that 2%. And we're charging you 3% in the loan. We're not making more money than we would otherwise. But how that's accumulating is, again, that we owe you a lower death benefit,
yeah,
as I mentioned, because it's like netted against it, right? So actually, our dream is that everyone takes policy loans, because from our perspective, that is a way to get our 1% spread with no credit risk. But, you know, some people will, some people won't.
Okay, that makes it simple. Zach, you have there are some places I've read where you have kind of an AI overlay on some of the way you operate. Can you explain how you're utilizing artificial intelligence or AI inside of your business?
Yeah, I mean, we had a big asset manager offer to participate in our AI, and I ended up not taking the money because I didn't really know what they were going to add. But their whole theory of the case is like, you guys run a full stack life insurance company with 8 people. It's like unheard of. Look, I don't want to overstate it. Like, we're not, it's not like we've trained a bunch of personal, huge models and spend hundreds of millions of dollars like making life insurance bot. But we have certainly automated our operations. Like, we close our books. We close our books for Q2 in like, a day. So there's a lot of automation. There's a lot of really boring ways that workflows and agentic AI can come together to like make underwriting better and KYC better and serial scenario planning better. And we just slowly but steadily build all that stuff. And the truth of the matter is, for some of our investors, they see Bitcoin more as this amazing go-to-market strategy because we have a product, an insurance product that no one else has. When what they're excited about is, okay, when, like, everyone knows that you could build a better insurance carrier because these are just data and technology companies, but that doesn't help you when you're small. It really helps you when they're big, right? Like, if you can have a 15% return on equity company instead of a 10% return on equity company, like, that would be huge. When you have a $1 trillion balance sheet or whatever, a multi-$100 million balance sheet. It doesn't really help you when you're small because no one trusts you. And like the little extra margin is probably even viewed with suspicion. So I think that we're doing all that stuff, and that will actually be probably the long-term durable advantage as of, eventually someone else will launch a Bitcoin life insurance company or like integrate Bitcoin into their life insurance products. So the long-term moat is having built everything ourselves and better, whereas the short-term amazing thing about the company is like that we use the hardest money in the world.
This business with 10 with 8 employees. Can you talk a little bit about your
Well, now we
team?
have
And
14. I just want to be clear.
okay, all right, well, that's still like amazing. But talk a little bit about your team members and where they're based, if they're remote or if they're walking the pink sands of Bermuda, or how that functions.
One thing that's amazing about us is I actually would say in some ways our secret sauce is that we have mixed together a bunch of different expertise, and some of us are more bound together through Bitcoin than others. But yeah, in Bermuda, we have a chief financial officer who's a chartered accountant and worked at one of the big four. And there's a lot of our like finance and ops work. We have a chief risk officer who's a life actuary who came from Catalina, which is a big reinsurer in Bermuda. And then we have a like head of distribution starting in Bermuda as our third Bermuda employee. He was the head of agent distribution at a big offshore direct insurer. And then in New York, we have our head of insurance who was at New York Life for 22 years, from actuarial student to leading the entire individual life insurance business. And then he quit to work on Bitcoin before. And then we found him. And he's like, oh, this is the business I should have started. And then our head of credits in New York. And then the rest of us are in San Francisco. So that's, software engineers, my co-founder and I, chief compliance officer, who's just this amazing, like former CEO of a AML company who, PhD in financial crime. She's amazing. I have a chief of staff, and we have some like really amazing sales and partnership guys who, if you go to our website, meanwhile.bm, and sign up for a policy, they reach out to every single person who signs up and, gets an hour with them and talks them through the policy. I think I'm missing someone, so I'm sure they'll be offended, but anyway, that gives you a sense.
That's fascinating. Now, you've also been one of the most, I think, high raising in terms of funding for your company, with just closing a $40 million round this year, with a total of $60.5 million in equity that you've raised since the founding. So, with a small team, I'm sure that's very commendable. But can you talk a little bit about your fundraising journey, perhaps? it was you already had the relationships built because of the two other companies that you'd been involved with and your network in Silicon Valley. But how was it raising funding as a Bitcoin company compared to those other journeys? And what can you talk to us about your cap table and your investors?
Yeah, I think we've been very fortunate in fundraising all in all. And things have been, we've hit our timing with some luck, I think, which, you know, that's important. So as I mentioned, we raised our first $7 million from Sam Altman and Lockie Groom and Parker Conrad and Dylan Field and a bunch of Zach Abraham, you know, a bunch of people, but Sam and Lockie co-led the round, and that was in January 22. And that really got us off to the races, let us start the conversations with Bermuda, like hiring some people. And then we got we got permission to do what we're doing. It doesn't mean we launched, but we got permission. And then we raised what I ended up calling the C2, which was mostly from insurance people. So a huge insurance asset manager in New York called Hudson Structure Capital Management, Santander, the bank, MSNAD, which is a big Japanese insurer. I sort of knew, or we knew, that we wanted to have our Series A led by a Bitcoin or crypto specialist. And we understood that they were never going to be able to diligence our insurance capabilities or expertise. So my theory of the case was, okay, I'll go get a bunch of insurance companies to invest in this like seed too. So that was like $13 million. These are both approximates. And we had raised like $20.5 million. And that really got us through from like early 23, which even that $13 million is pretty lucky. Like, right, FTX blows up like late 22. So we raised that $13 million like right after FTX. But I think, you know, we had gotten the license and people like perceived. And then we basically went for 2 years, right? We built the entire insurance company. We launched. We got a bunch of users. Our unit economics are great. Stillmark invested in that round too, which is just this amazing Bitcoin fund. I really love Elise. Huge respect for her. And... you know, it's January this year. The ETF's been approved for a year. We have like year on year financials that are like quite impressive on growth, even on a small base. And again, our unit economics are good and et cetera. And yeah, we basically went to market and we pitched everyone. And I think it was tough. Be easier now if they were the Bitcoin treasury companies. I think it was sort of in the air that Bitcoin was doing well. Probably like our business is just complicated. So it took time. We have like a 20-page Series A memo that's like, honestly, there are pages, they're like, what is the business of insurance? Why Bermuda? You know, these like really fundamental things. And it just took a lot of meetings. And it's like any process, I guess, to make an entrepreneur feel better, which is like you get your nose first. So, you know, we started in the new year at the end of January. I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe this just isn't happening. Like, good thing we have like a lot of funding. because we bought a lot of Bitcoin to capitalize the company. And then, I guess, to be honest, we hit all-time high Bitcoin highs, and we got a few term sheets in a week. And then ultimately, we really liked two of the people we got term sheets from. One was Folger, which is a sort of like Bitcoin-focused firm, sort of all Bitcoin all the time, really doing growth now, right? Like Blockstream and Signum. So they came in and just made a great offer, and we like loved them as a potential partner. And then we had another competitive term sheet from a fund called Framework, which is like more a crypto DeFi fund, actually. They're like in Chainlink and Maple and Aave. They really, I don't know, they really are, they're serious about like financial services and crypto. And we basically polled all of our investors, a ton of our like policyholders, a ton of our friends. And what we happened over and over again is like, half the people were like, I love Folger. They're amazing. Whose framework? And then the other half of people would be like, Framework, best of the best. They're like the benchmark of crypto. They're amazing. Like, who's Folger? Like, never heard of those guys. And we were like, oh, and this is an opportunity, actually. Like, it's an opportunity in their perspective. It's an opportunity in what we're signaling to the market. It's an opportunity that they've like never co-invested. So we did a lot of difficult wrangling and we got them like to agree to co-lead. That made us basically have to force everyone else out of the round and give no one their pro rata. So it was really just the framework and Folger and then Wensis, who's
Coin Patient Zero.
Bitcoin Patient Zero, like founder of Zappo. So that was our $40 million series A.
Question about Sam Altman. You know, everybody today thinks of Sam Altman connected with OpenAI, but he was also the lead of Y Combinator. And I just wanted to see if that was a connection that you made with him. I mean, you had mentioned that Y Combinator could have been that choosing that over working with Stripe was a, you know, financially
wouldn't be where I am today, but yeah.
But, you know, if that trajectory, you never know what relationships you build and at certain yeah. times of your life.
So Sam was a visiting partner when I went through. It was Paul Graham. It was his last batch or second to last batch was the one I went through. So I knew Sam. How the round sort of happened, I'm going to sound so tactical, but anyway, basically... you know, we decided we were going to start the company. So what we did is we had this like week where we were just talking to angel investors we knew and we get in a lot of commitments. And then what happens is you start getting inbound from like Sequoia and Lightspeed and whatever, right? Because they know you're doing something. And so I was like, no, I'm not having any meetings. Like all the fun meetings are going to be in the third week of January. This is 2022. So I'm scheduling all those meetings so like you don't get like early no's a bull. And then basically in that second week, Lockie, who I worked with at Stripe, who's like a solo capitalist now, he got really interested and like that like would be that itself would have been amazing. He's just a really great founder friendly guy, like always available with text, like super involved. And then he called me maybe like 12 hours after we talked, like, you know, like 11 p.m. or something, and said, you know, I mentioned this to Sam, and like, Sam wasn't OpenAI then, but like, he wasn't like Sam Altman, OpenAI CEO. He was a big deal in Silicon Valley, but like, you know, he wasn't globally famous. Anyway, Lockie's like, oh, Sam, you know, to my surprise, was really interested in this. Like, will you talk to him? So I talked to Sam, and Sam's like just so smart. He's like, because of YC, like looked at so many companies. It was probably like a 40-minute conversation, but like probably the best questions. I don't remember. I should have written them all down, right? But fundamentally, what Israel mentioned was our pitch. Like, hey, I think there's an opportunity to build the biggest life insurance company in the world. Like our goal is to serve a billion people. We're going to use digital money to reach them. We're going to use AI and automation to serve them profitably. And I think that vision resonated with him. At the end of the call, he was just like, hey, how about Lockie and I co-lead the seed round? I was like, oh, this is great. You know, like there's no signaling risk really in Sam and Lockie. Like that is that they won't do the, if they don't do the A, I don't have to have all these meetings, you know, like I'm done. So, you know, we haggled on price and then that was that. But I think like Sam's brilliant. What I like to tell people, and I don't think you'd be offended by this, like Sam is incredibly busy. And I ask him to do like one thing every 6 months. Who does it? But if I asked him to do one thing every 6 weeks, he wouldn't respond to my emails, I think. So I like when I I've never asked for something like too ridiculous, but I bet if I was like, you know, the company's life depends on like me talking to the Secretary of Commerce like tomorrow, like he might make it happen, right? Like he can basically make anything happen, but you also have to only ask him to do like mission critical things. And even those infrequently.
And, you know, I have to ask as well, I don't mean to dig into all the aspects of the cap table here, Zach, but Wences drew my attention because I hadn't seen him participate.
Yeah, I mean, what Wences said to me is like, I haven't done a tech investment in 5 years because I don't think any tech investment will outperform Bitcoin. But you guys are like a levered bet on Bitcoin. So if you succeed, you will outperform Bitcoin. But to give you a sense of that, I don't know, like Wences is like this very chill guy. He's like sort of like somebody who has this surfer vibe. I don't even know if he surfs, but like this is just his vibe. It's like just a very like chill guy. So I get invited to his house, and he just has this beautiful house in Woodside. And actually, we spent like 90 minutes talking about credit, which we haven't talked about really here, but like, how do we get that 3% return? And he was just like instantly asking me questions. And he was really giving this vibe, like he didn't know a lot about it. He just like wanted to know like how we do it. And then at the end, he's like, great, you probably don't know this, but like, I'm actually probably the world's largest lender of Bitcoin. And you've said all the right things. And like, I want to invest. Like you have the exact same perception of credit, like who's a credit worthy, who's a credit risk, like how these deals should be structured. So that was my experience with Wences.
That's amazing. Wences is just, you know, of course, very well respected. And, you know, congrats to you, Zach, because you've brought on some pretty amazing people onto your cap table and from different backgrounds, which I think is very valuable as well. We got into it, but from banking to insurance to Silicon Valley tech to, you know, crypto and Bitcoin. I guess, you know, as we round off the conversation, Zach, what words of advice would you have to other entrepreneurs generally, and as well as entrepreneurs focused in the Bitcoin space, if there's any, you know, particular advice there?
Yeah, it's interesting. I sort of like personally stopped making angel investments and like stopped giving people advice, partially because it's like it can be very time consuming, and I know that I'm humble enough to know there's a lot of path dependency. I think the thing I often tell people is like, you are building a business, and there is this aspect of Bitcoin, which I believe in, which is like there's an ideology and there's a belief in the way the world should be. And there's also a lot of amazing technology. And none of those things necessarily add up to a business. And I think one of the things that resonated with our investors, and like, let me just take even the most hardcore Bitcoin investors, again, like Folger and Stillmark. One thing that resonated with them is, although it's really complicated, this is a discernible business model. You know, like, we're doing it in like interesting, novel, important ways, but there's no question that, that it's a business and not either a research project or a political project. So I think that's often like my simple advice to folks is like, I chat with them and I'm like, yeah, often you're like in one of these two categories of like a technical project or a political project. And like that actually is fine. In fact, like having that as a subcomponent of whatever you're like I also have a political project. My political project is that like I think everyone in the world should be able to like save for the long term, but it's also the case that if I'm successful at that, like not only will ever all their lives be better, but also the company will be huge. I think that that's my big thing. The only other thing I'd say is like, I tell my fundraising story and like, I have a very like privileged fundraising story that comes from having founded my first company, and the perception of that company is that we were too early, but we're quite right about those markets. And I think that gave me a lot of advantages in fundraising. But I think lots of people say it, like Sam has said it, and I don't know, like Steve Jobs said it, like, you know, reality, everything in the world is made by someone. It's somebody's passion project. You know, every company, every building, every croissant properly cooked, you know, is someone decided to do that. And I'm like, that's what company building is really about. Like, you just have to decide to do things and keep going and have grit. And I think some people want to do that and some people don't. You just have to decide which of those types of people you are.
Zach, from inside of Silicon Valley and so much experience with it, I mean, one of the things that we see is that there is still a disconnect in the funding that goes to Bitcoin companies, Bitcoin-oriented companies versus crypto. I think that's switching a little bit, but, you know, certainly there are a lot of VCs that are not yet understanding the opportunities that exist in the Bitcoin financial system and the remaking of the financial global financial system on a Bitcoin rail. What would you say about, you know, helping those VCs understand the opportunity, or what is your perspective of how that can switch to get more funding and support for Bitcoin companies?
Wish I knew when. Well, I mean, partially, like, if you, not to dive into my cap table, but, like, you'll notice that there is currently no, like, Index or Sequoia, Lightspeed, or,
Andreessen, yeah.
Andreessen. I think one of the challenges I've had some of those firms is, like, Bitcoin, not crypto, certainly. Some of it is, like, post-FTX, just a ton of those firms have been really shy. I think I also end up having a challenge for us, which is that like the person who understands Bitcoin or crypto, I know there's different things, but like the person who knows that and the person who knows insurance, if there's anyone who knows insurance, are like different people. And that's always complicated inside firms. You sort of need like one real champion, and it's hard if you sort of exist between expertise and people. That's a very like me problem. But I think to answer your question, like, I don't know, actually, I was talking this week with a GP at, let's say, like one of the five, like really big crypto BTC funds. Right. One of the funds that like have raised more than $500 million. And I was asking him how it's going, and he's like, oh, you know, it's all my friends at the traditional VC firms are calling me again, asking me about things. So we'll see. I think it's been interesting that this year, there's so much institutional adoption of Bitcoin. Right. You got BlackRock and Fidelity saying you should put 1% of your retirement savings in Bitcoin. These Bitcoin treasury companies we'll see how much success they really have in the public markets, but like they've at least had some success raising a bunch of capital and hopefully buying Bitcoin. So it's been interesting to see the like TradFi markets be more excited about Bitcoin than the VCs. Like, that's not usually how it's supposed to work.
Bitcoin kind of flips it, and it started with plebs, which has never been the case, where, you know, individual investors had the early in on a life-changing investment opportunity or technology. So that's been interesting to see too.
Yes, absolutely.
We thank you for your time, Zach. It's been great to get into the ins and out of the business, and you're certainly, I think, setting a solid example for a purely Bitcoin denominated business. So you know, again, big admiration for everything you guys are doing. Thanks for the time. And we look forward to staying in touch with you guys. It'll be great to follow the journey.
Yeah, really. Thanks so much for having me here. And I enjoyed the conversation. Great questions. And honestly, just always good to chat with all Bitcoiners.
And Zach, where can people follow you and the journey of Meanwhile? Where's the best place?
Yeah. So, well, if you're interested in learning more about the policy, you can sign up at meanwhile.bm. Meanwhile.com redirects if you want to do that. I'm at Z Townsend on X, and Meanwhile is at Meanwhile Life. Meanwhile is dormant. If anyone knows how I can get it, you know, let me know. Yeah, that's us. And we're quite accessible. I think, as I said, like every single person who signs up on the website, you know, gets an email from one of my colleagues or me, and we offer to have time. Like, we've talked, I think, for over an hour, and there's often questions about every aspect of the company. You know, how's the policy work? Like, can you prove you have a license? Like, and people want to really go through, you know, how we invest the assets, what our chief risk governance qualifications are, like, you know, all this stuff. And so we're really available to go through all that. You know, our if you really boil down our business, it's based on trust. And we know that there's a complicated history in trusting counterparties in Bitcoin. So we really do everything we can to meet people where they are, and share what we're building.
Well, we'll be sure to include some of those links in the show notes. And thanks again, Zach.
Thank you,
Zach. Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd truly appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment on whichever platform you're listening, as this helps others find us, which is especially important for a new podcast. And as a reminder, our content is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only, and is not to be considered investment advice or recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the podcast. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a full-service, 100% reserve custody, Bitcoin-only financial services company. For your next Bitcoin purchase, use our exclusive link, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.